You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29 in Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
Baseball really wasn't meant to play 17, 18 innings. I get it in the playoffs. I love it in the playoffs. I think that's where it belongs. But in the regular season, all it does is it really sets your club back.
Ravens, I think you could point to maybe the interior of the offensive line and the wide receivers as weak spots. But other than that, they are loaded and they're deep. This roster is without any major hole.
We got Patrick Mahomes on the Kansas City Chiefs. That's going to be the best roster. Why? My man Hembo gave me a little stat. I don't have all the stats like Fox has, but when he's on the field, they average 6.6 yards per play. He is a difference maker. He completes a roster because of what he's been able to do.
And now, well aware of the difference between roster and team, Seren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. An important distinction, and we're going to talk about that here in the program. Difference between roster and team. Somebody tries to go and have fun, somebody's got to be a wise ass. That's pretty much how it works in the world of sports today, is it? Is it not?
It is. And no matter what I do, I'm on the opposite side of, you know, if someone's having fun, I want to ruin it. If I'm having fun, someone else wants to ruin it.
When you said you were on the opposite side, I thought you meant opposite side of being a wise ass, that you were a dumbass.
Well,
is that where you were going?
I think many wise asses are dumbasses.
Curtis Vaughn. Seabold.
I think we're all aware that is pretty good.
Many wise asses are actually, when it's all said and done,
The Venn diagram of wise asses and dumbasses, there's a lot of crossover.
That is superb. I think we've hit upon something. Okay. That works. That works for me. I like it.
They attempt to be a wise ass. They don't know they're a dumbass. If they were smart, they'd know they were a dumbass, and they wouldn't be a wise ass.
You know, we
have plans, and then I go and wreck.
Right. We have plans. We have a place we're going to go, something we're going to do, and it ends up.
Curtis Seabold, show killer.
I even led down the path.
I even struck the first chord of the song, and I'd still drove it off the road.
I'm impressed. I really am. You've outdone yourself this time. Congrats.
For those of you in the car, no, you did not just hear an accident.
I mean, aside from the one over the air.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Car crash. That's what it is. I see what you're saying. I see where you're going with this. Let's get moving, huh?
Yeah.
It is the program. Let's start over. Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
And now.
It is the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us. A lot coming your way today. Coming up in our next hour, we'll give you a chance to win great Cajun food from Jazz. Who else is doing that? Who else is giving you the best Cajun food anywhere around? But the program, no one. All you got to do is stump the chumps. Peter Yates, Enoch will join us. Todd Lebo, if he's got time. I don't know. He's been a busy man today. I've had Zoom calls going on. There's been a lot going on. We'll see if Todd's got time to join us, hang out with the lowly people. Eric Eager. From PFF, they call it the Pro Football Focus. He'll be with us. We're going to actually talk about one of the things they did, and I can't figure out if ESPN just stole it. I texted Eric earlier. Let me add this. So,
what would you say?
I guess that's a no comment. I texted him earlier. I said, did you see that ESPN is basically running the PFF NFL rosters 1 to 32 piece on their site? Did you guys agree to that? It's pretty cavalier if they didn't go. They took all the PFF grades, put them in the PFF order, and just put it out on ESPN. I'm like, or you could just say link to PFF. But instead, the whole story is okay. We'll see what he has to say about it. That's just a little industry thing. I'm like, can you take somebody who's got a paid site? Now, a lot of PFF stuff's available without the paywall, But can you take their stuff and just kind of rewrite some things in and around it and be like, oh, yeah, but I wrote a different commentary.
Okay. So therefore, it's mine. They sampled. They're the modern, that's the sports media version of sampling.
I guess
ours goes dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yes, that's right. That's right. They're the vanilla ice.
ESPN, the vanilla ice of sports.
I do enjoy Rushmore as a laugh track very much.
Kind of off in the distance.
One, because she seems to get our humor. I don't know that that's a strong thing for her, but, you know, we know she seems to enjoy the program, so we've got that going for us. We will speak to Jeff Passan today as well. He's a big deal.
Had a busy week.
Baseball insider for the ESPN and us here at the program. Moonlights with ESPN. Works with the program, right? Is that how we like to put it?
Well, in fact, when he's on ESPN, I think they should title him as Program Baseball Insider.
Yeah, Program MLB Insider. Jeff Passan joins Scott Van Pelt next. I think that'll work. Joins Greeny.
I don't know who the first person was that noted that everyone has to say Greeny, but man, that I've noticed it, I notice it every freaking time. And I will say, Jeff says it a lot.
It was Danny like 2 weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was gonna try to see if Curtis could actually get it. Thanks, Jed, for swallowing the olive there.
No problem.
Unreal how often they say that. I never noticed it.
Who would be somebody who would be grumpy about something
yes.
that gets unleashed on Fridays here?
Daniel
Harbert. Danny came in, guns blazing. I mean, do they have to? Greeny. You know, Greeny.
And all the nicknames, but.
It sucks! Yes.
Danny's still leashed at the moment.
Yeah, leashed. Leashed until Friday. Until Friday, then we will unleash him. Let's do start with the thing that I'm going to ask Eric Eager. Did you guys sign off on this? Ben Lindsay is claiming he wrote it for ESPN. On Pro Football Focus, it's credited to probably the whole staff. I don't know where. They don't really have a byline by it on PFF. No. Oh, I'm sorry. I take this back. Maybe if you read the bylines, you'll find out that it's Ben Lindsay on PFF as well.
Oh.
So it's his piece. Maybe I should have looked that up, you know? I don't know.
So they just stole the entire thing then.
Right.
and called it exclusive content.
They did at least give him credit. There's probably some trade agreement or something. To draw attention to it. But anyway, what they did was rank the NFL rosters from 1 to 32. And we're going to hear from a couple of folks who had comments about this, Dominique Foxworth and Jeff Saturday, in that order, Jed. Who are commenting about this deal. It's, again, one of those things. Should have said something during the 5 minutes.
Jed, I got it.
Sitting here talking about nothing during the changeover, but... we're going to hear their breakdown to it. But the purpose is to go and see who has the best roster. Let's set it up with the debate on ESPN. Dominique Foxworth this morning talking about his pick for best NFL roster, and it was not the Chiefs.
Ravens. I think you could point to maybe the interior of the offensive line and the wide receivers as weak spots. But other than that, they are loaded and they're deep at a lot of positions. You know how I feel about secondary play. They have probably one of the best secondaries in football, and they have backups that can come in and play admirably. They got Heisman Trophy winner backup at quarterback. They got a Heisman Trophy winning running back, and this team is just loaded. They put Calais Campbell on that team. Calais Campbell is getting up there in age, but he is still a game wrecker, and that's not to even mention that they got the best kicker in football. And I know it doesn't sound like much, but it means a lot. At the end of late games, you have the best kicker in football, and maybe the best kicker that we've ever seen in professional football. This roster is without any major holes.
It means a lot if you're ranking the best rosters, which is what this is ranking the best rosters. It's not ranking the odds of winning a championship. And I love this discussion because this is what we talked about a lot last year. A lot of people got frustrated with me, mostly in the media, not really the fans. I think most fans liked what I was saying because it was pro-Chiefs. But, you know, well, the Chiefs don't stop the run well enough. Well, they don't run the ball well enough. They're going to have to run better. They can't win a championship with a weak running game. And I would say, listen, those are wonderful stats, and yes, those are things that can help you win. But at the end of the day, when they get into the postseason, quarterbacks are the ones who make it happen, and quarterbacks that can spin the ball, because you're going to have a day that you're going to have a game that you get behind. My plan wasn't for the Chiefs to get behind by double digits in all three games. There's usually you win maybe two where you're in front or trading scores, and then one that you got to come from behind. But that's how the playoffs happen. Well, nobody wanted to hear that. Like, well, you don't run well. Well, but that's not the most important thing. Just like having the best roster, having the best 53 is not the most important part. Here's Jeff Saturday, though. While you're going to like it because he's hyped on the Chiefs, not getting it. Jeff Saturday said the Chiefs have the best roster because they have the man at quarterback.
We got Patrick Mahomes on the Kansas City Chiefs. That's going to be the best roster. Why? My man Himbo gave me a little stat. I don't have all the stats like Fox has. But when he's on the field, they average 6.6 yards per play. 6.6 per play. So with Patrick Mahomes, Hill, Kelce, that offense, it overcomes all roster deficiencies because of what he can do. They're 12-4, Nick. They're 12-4 when he gets banged up. Heaven forbid if that man stayed fresh all season last year. This guy, he is a difference maker. He completes a roster because of what he's been able to do.
But he doesn't. Listen, I like that, and I agree. If we're talking about who's going to win, I agree. For the same reason, I agree that the Ravens were not going to beat the Chiefs. Now, who knows? They didn't play, so I can't claim success on that. I can claim success that the Chiefs won the championship, that they were, in my opinion, the team to beat. I think that bared out. They didn't have to beat the Ravens to get there. But, you know, this is a fun exercise about who has the best roster. If you want to say, you know, we can just roll down the Vegas odds if you want to know what are the odds to win. Chiefs and Ravens are right up there, and in some co-favorites, but usually it's the Chiefs, then the Ravens, then the Saints and Niners are the next couple of ones. By the way, in this piece, the rosters go Baltimore 1, New Orleans 2, 49ers 3, and Chiefs 4. You know, it's okay, right? Like, you don't have to say the Chiefs are number one at everything. They don't have to be the best everywhere. That's not the purpose of this exercise. You know, it's you can still be the Super Bowl favorite without having the best roster. So, you know, the Chiefs have, I think what the Chiefs are a great example of is building, and what Brett Veach and his staff, along with the coaching staff, have done is make sure that they're really good where it counts, right? They're not very good at frankly, if you compare them to the rest of the NFL, at guard, center, guard. They're not atrocious. They're serviceable. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif had his worst season. In fact, I believe he's the lowest graded player on the Chiefs offense. He is. Now they're using Clyde Edwards-Helaire's college grade, so we'll see what his pro grade is. But he's the only guy that's not 60 or better on the PFF grades. But that's where you want to be weak. That's where you can get by. There's help. There are guys next to you. If you're put on roller skates and being bulldozed by Aaron Donald, you can have a running back help there. You can have the center slide over and double team. You can do things in there. That's where it's acceptable to be weak. Where you don't want to be bad is out on the islands. And those are the tackles. Eric Fisher graded a 71.2, so he's kind of an average left tackle. At right tackle, an 89.3 for Mitchell Schwartz. I say he's the best right tackle in football, and that's why they're good. Oh, and by the way, their quarterback has a 90.2 grade, highest grade amongst PFF quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback. Yes, that does complete out the roster, but what the point is there, and listen, Damian Williams, even at a 65.7, Damian Williams didn't have a good grade, didn't have a great grade. That's okay, because running back's not the premium spot. They're wideouts, they're pass catchers. Travis Kelce, an 86.1, Tyreek Hill, an 84.5. They're an example, and by the way, all of their blue ink, if you're reading the ESPN version, where they have a little bit more impressive aesthetic look to it because it's easier to highlight who the best players are, you'll quickly see that they've got four players on offense with blue ink, right, the better players, including one that's 90 or better, Patrick Mahomes, with the darker blue ink, and two more with the gray ink. Sammy Watkins at 71.6 and Eric Fisher at 71.2. So they've got six players. On defense, they've only got four, and only one of them is in the blue ink. And, yes, that is Chris Jones. But that's at a premium spot along the defensive line where he applies pressure. Now, I love the Pro Football Focus grades. It's a great starting point. It's an unbiased, objective opinion of what guys are. And I had this conversation, if you happen to catch the PFF forecast, where I was a guest of Eric Eager and George Sharuri. I said, listen, you know, they're Frank Clark grade, and George wanted to give me some bounce back because he didn't like the move for Frank Clark. And frankly, I wouldn't have done the move for Frank Clark either because of the cost in draft picks as well as what it was going to happen cap-wise. But Frank Clark is better than the 63.3. And one of the things we talked about in that interview was that, you know, Frank Clark's sack to finish the Super Bowl where Jimmy Garoppolo is ruled in the grasp, he doesn't win that rep because of how long it took him to get there. When he helps seal the deal against the Houston Texans, where he's almost like, you know, a hairball circling the drain in the shower, where he finally circles and circles and gets to Deshaun Watson. He gets a sack, which is a critical play in that game, but he doesn't win that rep because of how long it took him to get there. But that is still, that's the difference between Frank Clark and D4. D4 doesn't get there with the initial rush. He pretty much just quits on the play. Frank Clark never quits. And so while he doesn't win that rep, he does win the game. Frank Clark is better than the 63.3 grade that they have, and that 63.3 grade is watered down based upon him playing hurt with the injured neck for the first half of the season. And I think he's better than that. But if you're going to be weak, all right, their weak spots are Derek Nnadi at D-tackle, Alex Okafor on the edge, okay? It's Damien Wilson. It's Anthony Hitchens, right? Now they're projecting William Gay as a starter, and they've got his college grade at 83 there. But Anthony Hitchens, a 44.4, one of the lowest graded everyday players in football, all right? And if that's true, I'm fine with that. It shows you that the middle linebacker is not the key to success. That's not where you're going to win. Do you want to upgrade there? Sure. Will William Gay take that spot over next year in 2021? Maybe. I think he very well could. Is he always going to be on the outside? He might. Either way, he improves this linebacking core. But and you want to get better anywhere you're weak. Every player matters. But the key spots, their safeties, Tyrann Mathieu, 75.4. Juan Thornhill, 71.5. I'll tell you that I think Mathieu played better than even that grade goes. Rashad Fenton graded over a 70. I think Charvarius Ward's better than the 65.7 grade that he has, but that's still a guy that's an average player, right? They had it where it mattered. Most of where it mattered was on offense. So, yes, I do think the Ravens have a better offense or have a better roster, right? If you want to grade them 1 to 53. But when they get to the postseason next year, this year, the ultimate deciding factor will be the same, unless it's just – one team is completely banged up and the other one isn't. At some point during the game, the quarterback's going to have to make a play with his arm. And I'll take 15. All right, that's what it's going to come down to. And if the Chiefs truly do have one of the top five rosters, I actually think their roster is somewhat inflated. I don't know that they belong at four, right? But I think they've got it where it counts. First and foremost, the quarterback, right? That's the biggest part. Then the playmakers. And then they've got the tackles. And those are the things that you need on offense. Over on the other side, they've got guys that can pressure, and they've got depth of quality in the secondary. And I think that's more important than having one great guy. Would you love to have a Stephon Gilmore added to this mix? Yes, I would love to see the Chiefs get a true elite shutdown number one corner. That would take this defense to a whole nother level because it would allow Steve Spagnuolo to play some man or play zone with one man and put him there and shadow him and be able to get more creative. But I'd rather have the quarterback and the weapons and the tackles on offense than I would say, oh, well, we've got the number one corner. And I'd rather have depth of coverage people on defense than say, oh, well, we've got Deion Sanders. And I think the one part about the Chiefs secondary that's really underrated is their ability to tackle. And not just tackle after receivers have caught the ball, but to come up and support the run. If there is a major difference in watching the Chiefs, and it's not necessarily that they're coming up and getting TFLs, tackles for losses, behind the line of scrimmage, you know, making the big showy play where they fly up and take a guy's legs out and he kind of, you know, cartwheels down to the ground and the guy jumps up pumping his fist. Sometimes it's just getting a guy after an 8-yard gain. All right? But that's better than the Ole tackling we saw from Marcus Peters. They tackle. You know, I talked to Daniel Sorensen at one of the media sessions at the Super Bowl about his tackle he made on Travis Henry. And it was one of the most, well, not Travis Henry.
Derek Henry.
Right?
No.
Derek Henry.
Derek Henry,
sorry.
Yeah.
Yes. Suddenly got the.
Patrick Henry.
Travis Henry, I'm sure, is picking up one of his many children from camp right now. If you don't get that, Google it. You'll see what I mean.
Trust me, it's funny.
It's funny. But his tackle on Derrick Henry came after Henry had blown through the line and got a first down, and it was 12 or 13 or 14 yards down the field. And Daniel Sorensen, just like he did against the Houston Texans on the fake field goal, came up and took down Derrick Henry. And physically, and it was a good physical tackle. I mean, Dirty Dan is not afraid to come up and put a stick on somebody. And Henry's the biggest, baddest thing going in running backs these days, and he brought him down. Now, one, I think even though they'd just given up a first down, and it was a chunk play for the Tennessee Titans, the physicality of the tackle brought emotion to the defense. But the tackle kept it. I don't know that Henry was going to go the distance for a touchdown, but it made him have to line up and burn some more plays. It was another rep. It put some wear and tear on Henry on that, and Henry really didn't have another big play the rest of the day. And if I think there's a part of the Chiefs roster that maybe this doesn't take into account, it is that they are a tackling defense. And we heard it a couple of years ago, and it was lip service, but they started delivering on it, being a tough defense. They were more of a tough defense this year. They got that from Frank Clark. They always had it from Daniel Sorensen. And I'm not telling you Sorensen's a Pro Bowl player. You know, I was watching the replay of, I don't know which game it was, because they've had so many of the Chiefs games on from the whole 18 season with Mahomes MVP replays and then the playoff games. But there was a play where he tried to knock a guy out of bounds. He didn't get him out, and the guy went in. I think it was against the Rams in 18. That's when it was. And it ended up the guy turned on up the field and went in for a touchdown. I'm not saying that Dan Sorensen's infallible, but I am going to tell you that Daniel Sorensen makes big hits. Daniel Sorensen will come up and make the tackle you've got to make, forcing the Tennessee Titans to go back into the playbook, get deeper into the playbook, and have to make other plays. That was a big part of beating the Tennessee Titans. It's not going to be glamorized. It won't be on any highlight tape you want to see, but it was a monumental play for that defense to force the Titans to go back into the playbook, get deeper, find something else, and keep trying to grind their way down the field. That's what good rosters can do, right? Grind and grind and grind. But in big games, at some point, you need big plays. You need to be able to get down the field in two or three. You know, everybody bitched and moaned about the Vermeil years. Well, they scored too fast. Shut up. That's dumb. That's really a dumb statement. Get better on defense. That's the answer. Now, once you're saddled with a bad defense, are there times that, yes, you've got to try to play the clock game? They are. They're late in the game. But scoring quickly in the first quarter means you put points on the board, you're giving yourself a cushion, and you didn't have to get very far into the game plan to get it done. Because I'm going to tell you, there are not 90 gotcha plays every week. There's a handful of them, and you don't want to have to burn them just to get down the field the first two drives of the game. And then the rest of the game, be trying to just win off physicality. And the Kansas City Chiefs give Andy Reid and their offense the chance to have those gotcha plays whenever they got to go get them. Like Jet Chip Wasp in the Super Bowl, when they needed it, it was there. They didn't have to burn it just to keep pace with the 49ers earlier in the game. 913-3-810-810. We're talking NFL football to get things started. However, Sporting, Royals, Chiefs, K-State, KU, Missouri, always a topic here in the program. 913-3-810-810. You're listening to the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
Saying the truth, this guy's starting to get on my nerves.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us here today. The program proudly brought to you by our friends at Worth Harley Davidson North. They're at I-29 and Tiffany Springs. That is where you will find Worth Harley-Davidson North, the finest, the biggest, best Harley-Davidson dealership anywhere in the Midwest. If you're going to GPS at 9400 Northwest Prairie View Road, you can find them online at worthharleydavidson.com. See their complete lineup of new and pre-owned motorcycles. Great time to buy right now. No hidden fees, no surprises. They will finance your licensing and registration costs if that is something that will help you out. They will even deliver the bike to your house. That is right, home delivery. It's a reality with Worth Harley-Davidson North. Take advantage of it. Go see them today. And like I said, in person, 9400 Northwest Prairie View Road, or online at worthharleydavidson.com. And you can get zero down and make no payments until November. So you want a great way to socially distance? Get a Harley and get out and ride with the best bikes around for the best dealership around, Worth Harley-Davidson North. 913-3810-810. We're talking NFL football roster construction. Chiefs voted the number four roster, and I actually think that's generous. I get that they don't – nobody, you know, to be honest with you, I think nobody just wants to answer the emails about how can you have the Chiefs at number four. Now, if you want to say, well, the quarterback counts 50%, okay, I'm fine, then you need to lay that out. But I will tell you from scrolling through this, if there's a team that this is a no excuses year, it's the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
Right? Mike McCarthy, I know it's his first year on the job, but they got plenty of blue on that roster with Dak Prescott. Zeke Elliott's actually not even one of their players that's up listed at the highest level. He got a 77.2, which is still good.
And a ton of
gray. He's not 80 plus. Dak Prescott, Tony Pollard, the backup running back, Amari Cooper, Zach Martin, right guard, Lael Collins, right tackle. Then their left tackle is in gray, Michael Gallup. That will be the second or third wideout. He's in gray. And then on the defense, they got six guys 70 or better, plus a guy over 80, DeMarcus Lawrence, their edge rusher. So they've got a pass rusher. They've got depth at safeties. They're counting on a rookie to step in and make it happen at cornerback, but he's a first-round pick, so he ought to be pretty good. There is no excuse for the Dallas Cowboys, particularly when you see these grades packaged together and the colors jump out at you. They've got as much color on their roster as anybody out there.
Yeah, and for Mike McCarthy, I mean, I don't think he had this kind of – he definitely didn't have this kind of defense when he was in Green Bay. He lived largely on the Chiefs model of having the quarterback and everything kind of filled in. He has a guy at quarterback who is considered great with that defense. I mean, he walks into and the fact that it's the Cowboys. I mean, it isn't just the perception. It's the perception of the Cowboys. Man, that's a hell of an undertaking for him. But if they come out this year and they're 8-8, I mean, that's I have not as a secondary Packer fan. I've always said I've not terribly impressed with Mike McCarthy. I think most of the things they accomplished in Green Bay were because of Aaron Rodgers. And he was just happened to be the coach. He can prove that he's got it, but they can't go 8-8 this year. If they go 8-8 or they kind of stumble around, unless they're racked with injuries, then I think they have to kind of rethink whether that was the best move. But you're right, man. They're loaded on defense, not just offense.
Mike McCarthy has no excuses here.
No.
Unless Dak Prescott is grossly overrated, and I think he might be mildly overrated. But 4,900 yards, 30 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Lots of weapons, though. I mean, got the offensive line, got the running back, got the wideouts. Now even more got the wideouts. I think it's put up or shut up time when you see how good that roster is. I mean, their roster looks better than Baltimore's, who they put at number one.
And the strength of their defense, I mean, linebacker is not particularly good. But when you got three stars on the line and three stars in the secondary, that's kind of what you want to do, and so they're all set.
913-3810-810. Let's go to the phones. Tommy Moe wants to chime in. You're in the program, Tommy. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, not much. I'm just glad, even 4 months later, to recognize Dan Sorensen. I've been critical of him, but he made three or four plays last year during the season. Right guy at the right place at the right time, and I agree. When he hit that hit on Henry, it was a 12-15-yard game, but he hit him right in his thigh, and Derrick Henry was done. It was like Derrick Henry said, well, you know what? It's a long season. I'm done. And they gave him the ball a couple of times on a second and short, third and short. He went nowhere. He didn't put his head down and try to gain a yard. So, first off, I'm glad you recognized Dan Sorensen, because I know I've been critical of him. He ended the San Diego game down in Mexico, So he's been there.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt, and I think those little subtle things are the ones that are hard to quantify, right? I've had these conversations with Eric and George that there's the, you know, the data, there's the science, but there's also the art to it, and Daniel Sorensen, that tackle, is part of the art, right? Or you want to call it eye test or whatever. I mean, you know, do you get a great grade because you tackled a guy after a 15-yard gain? No, I mean, the defense doesn't get a win on that, but, you know, it allows you to be more aggressive up front if you feel like, which to try to make those negative plays, to get the long downs and distances, to get to where they're in a must-throw situation so you can get more creative with your pass rush and your coverages. If you know that you've got guys that can tackle in the back end, and Tyrann Mathieu, Daniel Sorensen, Juan Thornhill, those guys can tackle, and that allows you to be much more aggressive up front because you feel like, okay, if it's one-on-one, they're going to get it done. And I'm going to tell you, a guy, it's one of the reasons why it's my pet peeve that he's not in the Hall of Fame. It's one of the things that I think was very underrated about De'Ron Cherry's game. Like, we know the four-interception game and how he was a ball hawk and he played center field. But De'Ron Cherry was an underrated tackler, and he never got credit for that around the league. And one of my favorite plays I've ever seen a Chief make is when Bo Jackson was at his peak playing for the Raiders, and he comes blasting through the line on his way, full head of steam, headed down the field, and it's just De'Ron Cherry. And Cherry came up and tackled him for about a 12-13-yard gain and got bulldozed. I mean, got taken back, but brought him down. And the Raiders didn't, my recollection is, it's been a long time, obviously, since that play happened, is that the Raiders didn't go on to score. That tackle saved a touchdown.
You're right.
And that kind of tackling ability back there gives a defensive coordinator a lot more freedom to be aggressive up front. And I think the Chiefs have, I think that's one of the little subtle things of Brett Veach, who, you know, you talk about, we were critical of Daniel Sorensen. There was a lot of criticism of Brett Veach early in the year when the defense was giving up a lot of yards. But I think that's one of the ways they got better. They have guys that can tackle in that secondary, and they know that, you know, if they can just avoid the big play, they can make some big plays on defense and get the other team off the field.
And all you had to do was just watch that Mahomes 2018 marathon on Sunday and go, oh, my gosh, like a refresher course on just how bad a tackling secondary that team had in 2018. Not last year.
And I think on that De'Ron Cherry, I may be mistaken, but I think he fumbled on that play and the Chiefs recovered. I remember the play right there as soon as they, and I remember he broke through the line, and I thought De'Ron hit the ball, tackled him right on the ball, he fumbled it. And talking about Frank Clark's low grade, you know, Frank Clark, to me, him and Justin Houston were about the same player last year. But for whatever reason, and you've mentioned it and I've seen it, Justin Houston did not like being a Chief. Frank Clark liked being a Chief. There was a correlate. Him and Chris Jones became a dynamic 1-2 punch. And his grade may have been only 63, but it just timing, once again, like Daniel Sorensen. Daniel Sorensen may have had a low grade, but he made – timing play, great plays throughout the year when we needed it. And was it all three playoff games, including the Super Bowl? Frank Clark pretty much ended each one of those games with a sack against all three, the two AFC games and the Super Bowl. His three sacks, he had five sacks in three games, but three of them came on the last offensive play pretty much and ended those three games.
I love the comparison. I think you're right, and I think if the reaction is, well, but he's making so much more money than Justin Houston, yes, and that's one of the reasons why I wouldn't have made that trade. I have no problem with the fact that it was made, and I think Brett Veach called his shot, said this is the last guy, the last piece we need to be a Super Bowl champion. Then they went out and won it, so there will be no complaining from me, nor should there be any complaining from anybody to go get him. And I think there is something to be said. Frank Clark wants to be a Chief. Frank Clark also carries leadership skills. And maybe it's just the fact that he wants to be here that makes him a guy that people want to follow. But I know the way guys on that team looked at Frank Clark, and I know how Frank Clark carried himself and the way that people followed what Frank Clark did. And Justin Houston, not only was it clear that he really didn't have a whole lot of interest in being in Kansas City, but watching him around the team and how it was, he was kind of just like doing his own thing. And let's see, the Colts, you know, and if Phillip Rivers sucks and he's done, then you can throw this out. But if Phillip Rivers can still play and guide an offense and at least be a good veteran game manager, then the Colts should be really good this year. And let's see what Justin Houston does for the Colts. Let's see him play in all the games. All right, that's something he didn't do very often here for the Kansas City Chiefs. And let's see him bring it, and let's see him be a real leader down there. I'm not saying he didn't show emotion. When he made the big tackle in the backfield against the Chiefs, yes, he was fired up. He wanted to stick it to his old team. There's no doubt. But you just didn't see the way guys seem to, really, want to get in and be around and follow Frank Clark that way with Justin Houston. He was kind of this lone wolf that was good at football, checked in, did his job, did it really well. I mean, I'd love to have Justin Houston on the other side of Frank Clark. Then I think this team would be hell on wheels. And it's something that you hope we get to see. Maybe Breland Speaks will be that guy. Maybe Alex Okafor will take a step in his second year. I don't know. But the Chiefs were definitely a better team with Frank Clark than they were with Justin Houston.
Yeah, and lastly, I'd like to see our two first and second round draft picks. Who do you think will make the most impact sooner? Because there's kind of a groundswell for Willie Gay. It's just kind of like what Grunhardt has heard. And just, with Anthony Hitchens, I've never been a big fan, and the PFF kind of shows that his grade was very low. So is it Willie Gay going to be replacing Hitchens, or is it going to be Damian Wilson, or is there going to be a combination? I'm going to be interested in that triumphant of those three linebackers and how it's going to formulate throughout the year. But the more I hear about Willie Gay, the more I think, well, man, this guy may be playing, if not game one, a lot in game one. So we'll see.
Yeah, we will. And Tommy, thanks for the call, buddy. It's always good to hear from you. I will say this: I am not hearing the same thing from Tim. I am not hearing that, oh geez, we screwed up with this guy. No, not at all. They love the pick of Willie Gay. What I'm hearing is no player on the Chiefs roster is going to be hurt more from not having the real OTAs and mini camps than Willie Gay. That he's a guy that really needed the hands-on, on-the-field coaching. And it's one thing to look at it on a tape. It's another thing to go through it and get it done. Now, this might be wrong, maybe, but that's the vibe I got going into the virtual workouts. And I think he projects as an outside linebacker. That's where Steve Spagnuolo said when we had him on the Zoom conference call, he pointed towards him being on the outside. So I think you'll see him start like in the base 4-3. If they play a team, if they play the Titans and they're going to come out in their base 4-3, then I think you're going to see him be the starter. But I don't know that he won't be the first guy off the field when they go to a sub package, because I think the coverages and the responsibilities and that kind of thing, I think that might take some time. I think you're going to see a tremendous player, but I think he's a guy that needs the reps. That's what I've been told. He was involved in a, and I don't think anybody cares, because I care, but not a lot, that he was involved in academic fraud at Mississippi State. I think it shows a guy who's on the academic side going to cut corners. I don't think you can say he's going to be the best playbook guy if he got busted for academic fraud at Mississippi State. So whatever the limitations are, I think he's going to take a little time. But once he figures it out, then that athleticism is going to shine. I think you'll see him on special teams. I know you love that, Tommy. I think you'll see him on special teams. I think you'll see him in the base defense. But I think where he's going to be eventually, I think that's more year two before we see that kind of thing happen with Willie Gay. But whenever he's on the field, he's going to make a difference, right? I mean, he is what, he runs. And in my opinion, we're going to see the athleticism and see the way he runs early on. Like, that's going to pop off the screen at you like it does from his time, at Mississippi State. And I think ultimately he's going to cover the kind of ground that a lot of us were hopeful that we would see Dorian O'Daniel cover. But then when he gets there, he's going to deliver a thump, because he's got 20, 25 pounds on Dorian O'Daniel. Runs like him, but comes with a punch when he gets there. So I think he's going to be really good, but I say this so that if he isn't just tearing things up in the first half of the season, don't anybody panic, all right? Because I think better days are down the road for this kid. And listen, if he blows it up, sure, feel free to come and tell me I was wrong, and I'll be thrilled to say I was wrong. But I say this just to try to, maintain expectations so that people don't start calling the kid a bust his first day out there.
By the way, Tommy Moe's memory is prodigious. I'm looking at, maybe it's a Raytown High School thing. I'm looking at the official game book from that Chiefs-Raiders game in 1990. Chiefs score, kick a field goal to go up 3-0. Ensuing possession, first play, first and 10 from the 15. Jackson carries up middle for 7 yards, fumbles, and Deron Cherry's name is in the quotations or in the parentheses, so he forced the fumble, recovered by Albert Lewis, Chiefs ball. So that was the play. He had broken through, 7-yard gain. Deron Cherry hit him. The ball came out. The Chiefs got it back, turned it into a field goal, up 6-0 in a game that they never trailed.
Yeah. Deron could play. This just in.
That he could.
Deron could play. 913-3810-810. We'll take a break. We'll talk about Jack Del Rio. This story not getting a lot of coverage, and I'm kind of curious as to why it's not. Is Jack Del Rio turning his defense against him already, and does he not have a TV or a radio, as he has taken to Twitter? We'll see how this plays out in the long run. We'll talk about it next. One of the things you never see from the Chiefs coaching staff, have not seen any of them do something where you're going, what the hell are you thinking? Or where their players, more importantly, would be saying, what the hell are you thinking? Jack Del Rio's done that. We'll talk about it next year in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
You ever quote anything besides statistics, Vulcan?
Yes, but philosophy and poetry are not appropriate here.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're listening to the Program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stuff the Chumps coming up in our next segment. Peter Yates Enoch will join us. Todd Lebo will join us. We'll give you a chance to win that great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. And by the way, I want to remind people, for over 17 years, Tickets for Less has been there for its customers. I know it's uncertain times, and trust me, that is a great, great local company with great, great people. And you can think about it, nobody, maybe no business being hurt more by the pandemic than the folks at Tickets for Less. We don't know if we're going to have fans in the stands or how many, but the tickets are available right now. Every single customer who bought a ticket from the Big 12, from Tickets for Less for the Big 12 tournament, got their full refund, their fan insurance guarantee. They stand behind every ticket. If you do want to buy Chiefs tickets, right, and you want to know that you got a company that, yes, they will return your money if those tickets don't end up being able to be used, that is our friends at Tickets for Less. Look them up online at ticketsforless.com or call them at 913-685-3322. Home and road games, it's who I use when we travel to see the Chiefs play. They're never any service fees. And the fan insurance guarantee is absolutely critical during these very uncertain times. But you want seats. You want good seats. You want to get them in case they are open and there are some tickets, some fans that are allowed to be in. Go with Tickets for Less, 100% fan insurance guarantee. You will get a full refund if those tickets are not able to be used. So check them out. Call the guys and gals at Tickets for Less. Great, great folks. Great company. 913-685-3322. Find them online at ticketsforless.com. Jack Del Rio, this is not getting a lot of news. Where did I find this? It's Yahoo Sports. Not where I found it. Rushmore found this one. And I think it's kind of interesting because, you know, I'm wondering if Jack Del Rio has a radio or TV and watched what happened with Mike Gundy. Listen, let me be clear. You can wear whatever T-shirt you want, right? You can, you know, have whatever political opinion you want. But there are ramifications that comes with every action, right? For every action, there's a reaction. And those reactions can be type that cost you your job. We'll see what ends up playing out with Mike Gundy. Had he never worn that shirt, people wouldn't be digging up a story from 1989 where he was accused of calling numerous players on the Colorado Buffalo football team the N-word, right? That's not a good look for any head coach. It was seemingly, for lack of a better term, safely buried away until he wore the T-shirt and, you know, upset his players, and one thing led to another, to another, to another. Again, he has every right and will not be deported from this country for wearing that T-shirt, nor should he be, but there are ramifications that come with it. Jack Del Rio took to Twitter. You would think a guy who's been an NFL head coach, twice an NFL head coach, a defensive coordinator, won a Super Bowl championship as a member of the Baltimore Ravens staff, as the linebacker coach, would be a little bit more careful about what he tweets about. There was a tweet that came out And somebody had said Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And where does she write?
She said, Ocasio-Cortez, what was she accused of saying?
Where does she work?
Oh, she's a senator from, representative from New York. She's a U.S. congressman.
All right.
Freshman congressman.
So there is a tweet that says AOC, and you tell how much I know about politics, AOC hates America. Here's proof. All right. And it has a statement from her that reads, "It's vital that governors maintain restrictions on businesses until after the November elections, because economic recovery will help Trump be reelected. A few business closures or job losses is a small price to pay to be free from his presidency. Hashtag keep us closed." All right. Obviously, I thought it was inflammatory just for a writer, but obviously for a U.S. senator, that's a hugely inflammatory statement. Only problem is she didn't make that statement. It is a fake tweet, right? So that gets tweeted out. A fake tweet gets tweeted out, and Jack Del Rio then tweets out, "Wow, proof? Come on, AOC," right? He then started tweeting his support for President Trump. Had a video of a young lady going through all the things that President Trump has done for African Americans. He retweeted that. He said, "I'm 100% for America, and if you're not, you can kiss my ass," with the two S's as dollar signs. I'm not sure the point of the dollar signs.
I don't get it either, but hey.
You know, so here's my point. You know, look, Mike Gundy did something that may have been completely harmless. I don't think so. I think as a head football coach, either you're too stupid to know that that could be inflammatory, or you did it on purpose. Either way, you're in trouble, all right, with your players. And if players won't play for you, you will lose your job. Now, that I hope that situation solves itself and that he is not a racist and it moves itself forward. But if you're a defensive coordinator in the NFL, knowing the climate and knowing that 75% of your players are African American, are you really going to jump into that fray? Are you really going to do that? Like, why would you put yourself in that situation? We may not like how coach speak Andy Reid is, but this is why Andy Reid never wants his assistants talking. This is why Andy Reid answers in coach speak answers. It's why Eli Drinkwitz said, "With every question that you ask me, I'm thinking about how it's going to play." You know who doesn't think about how it's going to play? Eli Drinkwitz does. Jack Del Rio is not thinking how it's going to play.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
How many players from MU, KU, and K-State combined have scored touchdowns in the Super Bowl? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.